But let me introduce you to my guest on the sofa. And as I said a minute or two ago, not a stranger to the airwaves here of BBC Radio Suffolk. In fact, when he was a youngster, his ambition was to be a radio DJ. But in the end, it was an English teacher who inspired Jeff Barton to study English and then go on to teach. And Jeff came to Suffolk as a deputy head in 1997, became the head teacher at King Edward VI School in 2002. And now he retires from that school, doesn't put on his slippers, as I said, moves on to the next phase in his career because he has been voted the General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders, the ASCL, and takes up his post the 18th, just after Easter. Have I got that
right? That's right, yes. Exactly.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Because I know it was a contest, it was a vote, wasn't it?
It was. I decided to throw my hat into the ring, which was fairly unorthodox. First time an election has taken place with the association, and got a ringing endorsement from people who voted. So, yes, exciting, and looking forward to starting that next phase of my life.
So you did that and then resigned, is that so? You waited to see if you'd got the job?
No, I hadn't actually. I decided, in truth, about 18 months ago that 15 years of being a head teacher was probably enough for me, but also, more importantly, enough for a school. And I just didn't want people to think, he used to be good, but he kind of lost his touch or he lost interest in it. And I wanted to choose the right moment. And as you know, and your listeners will know, Suffolk has moved from a three-tier to a two-tier authority. And they will be bored from hearing about that. But we had to see that through in the West, in Bury St Edmunds. And I wanted to see that through properly. And we did do that. We got lots of new students. We brought 700 new students into the school in September. And it always felt to me like starting at April, as I did in 2002, was the perfect time for me to finish at April 2017, and that's what I decided to do. And then I saw that there was an opportunity for this national role, and I've got it.
So tell me what that means, what it involves.
So the association represents just over 18,000 school leaders, and that's head teachers and deputy heads, assistant heads, business managers, some of them in state schools, some in independent schools, some in grammar schools, some in Wales, some in Scotland, some in Ireland. Lots of school leaders looking after millions of young people, and we are the gatekeepers in many ways to their future. And so it's stepping from what I've been able to do in Suffolk to a national agenda, and to be able to do a number of things. One is to make sure that particularly head teachers who find it a lonely job and who need support can be guaranteed support, and the association is very good at that. But also to have some influence on government policy, and it's something I've been fairly outspoken about in the past, and look forward very much to being able to work with government and to express the views of our members in that range of different schools to make sure that what we're doing for young people isn't short-termist, but is actually in their interest and takes the profession, takes parents with us.
So you will actually have a voice that is heard in this respect, hopefully.
It's going to be an interesting time, I think, because we've got Justine Greening, the Education Secretary, who's relatively new in post. We've got somebody new in Amanda Spielman at Ofsted, someone new at Ofqual, the exams regulator. Me, new kid on the block. We've got a new college for teachers as well. So there's quite a lot of new people going to be around, and I think that if we can kind of shake off some of the baggage of what's happened during the previous era, there's an opportunity for us to work constructively and say, what do we want to do in the interest of all young people, and how can we help school leaders to deliver that?
So, and with that post that you've taken, would that normally be someone who's been in the teaching profession?
It has been traditionally. It happens that what the process was that I've just been through is that there was a nominated candidate who hasn't been a teacher, and I stood in opposition. And so essentially, I was somebody who was representing school leaders, and it went to a vote. That's happened in other unions before. It hasn't happened in ours, but it did give an opportunity for members of our school to say, what is it we believe in? Where do we see ourselves going? And it gives a mandate to me to make sure that I'm representing their views across the board.
And the fact that you've got such a good majority obviously means that you do feel that you're sort of speaking for them.
I think so. I had extraordinary support during the process, and lots of people sending their views. And finally, in the vote, 80% of people who voted voted for me. And there's a great team at the association. It's based in Leicester. They are people who are rooted in educational values. They've got a great motto, which is, we speak on behalf of members, we act on behalf of children. And in a sense, as a head teacher, sometimes putting my head above the parapet, I always, as my benchmark, was thinking, is this in the interest of young people? And if it is, then however unpopular it might be, let's go for it. And this role in that sense, whilst I don't think it'll be unpopular most of the time, it will be about taking ourselves back to what are the principles behind what we do on behalf of school leaders across the UK.
Do you think that that has been lost? And you've been in the education system a while now, haven't you? So you've seen it change. We've got academies. I mean, education has changed hugely from when I was at school. So do you think we've lost the focus of the fact that it is about the children first?
I think if you talk to parents, and I think if you look at Mori surveys, what parents like is usually they like their local school. In general, parents are very supportive of their local school. But they also have a perception that education nationally might be more fragmented and more splintered. And I think it probably is. And I think for some school leaders, the role has perhaps become more atomised, more isolated than it was when I started, because you didn't have someone at the end of the phone in the local authority you could phone if you were stuck. That said, what we've seen with multi-academy trusts developing is more localised support. And I think that the system is simply changing. And one of the things which I think I need to be able to do is to reflect those changes and to say to government, there are consequences for these new policies that you keep sending our way. Let's make sure we have thought this through properly so that we stop this juggernaut of new ideas which has been heading our way over the past few years, and actually go back to what you're saying, which is the principle of young people in school getting the best possible education.
And I was a school governor for a while at Coppleston High School, and it just staggered me. It's a huge business in terms of money. So for a head teacher, it's a really complicated thing to take on.
It is. I mean, I'm a humble English teacher by background, and one of the reasons that I liked being a local authority school was that people could do things that I either wasn't interested in or couldn't do. So I wasn't particularly good at managing a £7 million budget, but was fortunate in having three very good business managers and backup at the local authority, and the same with personnel, the same with IT support, the same with transport. And what that's allowed me to do is to focus on the stuff I can do, which is about pedagogy and about standards of teaching and education. Now, in truth, that's what the best of the multi-academy trusts are doing. They are having their own human resources people appointed within their trusts. And it's making a more localised solution, I think, probably to the kind of things that the head doesn't necessarily need to be getting involved in.
Now, you mentioned that your headquarters are not in Suffolk of your new job with Askell. Is that how I pronounce
right,
it these days
yeah.
instead of the long name?
Yeah.
So what happens about, do you move from Suffolk? Do you commute? Do you become a commuter?
Well, as we all know from living in Suffolk, the A14 is not the most commutable of highways. And so we did give that a whirl, actually, just to see, is it really feasible for me to be able to get to headquarters at 8:30 in the morning in Leicester, and it's not. So we have got a place in Leicester. Philippa is there, my wife is there today, kind of sorting it out. So I'll be living there off and on when I need to. But it's a strange job, because whilst the headquarters is in Leicester, and I want to be rooted with the great team that we've got there, and you've got people who are running the courses, you've got people who are solicitors who are responding to head teachers and other school leaders' concerns. So you've got a great team there, and I want to be able to work directly with them. A lot of the job is also travelling, and it's going to meet members around the country, including Northern Ireland and Scotland and Wales. So I wanted to have a base which was close to HQ, but I also know that I'm not going to be there all the time. And I think one of the parts of the job I'm looking forward to is that weekends will start to feel a little bit different from the day job, in a way that they haven't always with being ahead based in the community. So we will definitely be back here at weekends when I'm not doing other things, and we'll definitely be keeping our house in Suffolk, because we fell in love with Suffolk the first day we drove past the sugar factory and saw beyond that in Bury St Edmunds, and thought, this is a place where we want to bring our children up, and we've done that and we want to stay rooted here.
I know you've already left the school, so what are you going to miss from the school?
Oh, well, I spent last Friday afternoon, actually, which was my last afternoon, doing the thing that I think people who don't work in education don't realise, which is that schools are places that are simply full of laughter and full of joy. It's one of the great untold secrets, actually, that, you know, we had a silly dressing up day 2 weeks ago. The staff dress up, the students dress up. And last Friday, to the irritation of the staff, no doubt, I decided to bring out the school mascots who we have every sports day. And they clambered into their mascot suits, these three students. And we simply burst into lots of lessons, saying goodbye to them, utterly disrupting what was going on there. But the whoops and cheers of the students, I'm going to miss that day-to-day contact. Even that Year 7 girl who in the dinner queue last week said, who are you again? I'm really going to miss the reminder about the optimistic future of young people.
And the fact that I think that you probably through the time as a teacher have managed to, because it's a really tough thing for a teacher to retain the dignity and respect, but also to be able to joke and talk to youngsters. And you did that. Was that something you had to learn, or did it come naturally?
It's something I worried about in the early days. I mean, in the very early days, it will be hard for people to believe, but I actually looked relatively young, and so I grew a beard in order to look older, and I dressed like a kind of 52-year-old in order to look older. And I followed the old mantra of "don't smile till Easter" kind of thing, and quickly realised that actually that wasn't me at all. And also realise that the dressing up and the being silly doesn't undermine the respect of students. It actually does the opposite. They think he's somebody who is prepared to make a fool of himself from time to time. And, you know, one of the other things I will probably miss, though I think the students at school won't, is the annual Christmas show where I would dress up as Dolly Barton or whatever it happened to be that year. Fortunately, we don't have photographs of that. Before you ask, we don't have photographs of that. But doing those silly things actually reinforces your sense of being part of a school community. And I think, if it's not too pretentious, gives a sense to youngsters that making a fool of yourself in order to raise money for charity is a great thing to do, and schools continue to be places where people like me do that kind of thing.
Do feel free to sing along to Dolly Parton later on. Have a key question.
Right, no about this.
Thank you. So what is your question?
This question is, if you could throw any kind of party, what would it be? I love dancing. I try and avoid doing that in public, but I do love dancing, and I love salsa and that kind of thing. And so I would probably like a kind of a Mexican style party, Mexican food, Mexican cocktails, Mexican beer, and some really good Mexican dancers showing us all, whatever our age, whatever our abilities, what we can do.
Can I come? That sounds brilliant.
Definitely.
Friday afternoon, my guest on the sofa is Jeff Barton, former head teacher of King Edward VI School. He's retiring, taking up a post as the General Secretary of ASCL, ASCL, is that
yes.
How you say it as well?
Yeah.
Association of School and College Leaders. So hopefully affecting policy across the country as to how our head teachers are treated, how schools work and so on. Can we gallop? Because I just love the fact you like being there, but you'd rather be in my chair, wouldn't you? Because as a youngster growing up in Stafford and area, you wanted to be a DJ.
Oh, well, I was the number one hotshot on Hospital Radio Stafford.
Doesn't get
bigger than that, does it? Yeah, I'm going to say a sentence that you won't hear very often. I wanted, when I was young, to be Noel Edmonds.
I grew up quite liking what Noel Edmonds did as well.
I love Noel Edmonds on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show.
He was on Radio
was
1, wasn't he? He was
he
very
was breathtaking.
Good, yeah.
He was so creative. And so I grew up listening to that and those glorious days of radio when it was all about personality as well as the music in a way that you certainly don't get from independent radio now. I just loved it. And so, yes, wanted to be a DJ. Was very unacademic and unsuccessful at school. Put together at Hospital Radio Stafford my audition cassette, sent it off to one of the new radio stations, had it returned in a jiffy bag almost overnight without an acknowledgement, and was crushed.
That's awful.
But it shows a slight lack of commitment, I think, that, you know, that was enough.
Did you gave up
to
then,
put me
did
off.
So how did the English and the teaching thing come about? I think there was a teacher who inspired you, wasn't there, even if you were not very academic?
Yes. Yeah, so I kind of drifted through to what we now call year 11. We called it the fifth year in those days. That was when I tried to get my place in local radio and didn't. And with some pretty dismal GCSEs, I have to say. My mother, when she saw my they were O-levels in those days, uttered the one word failure, which stung a little bit. But thanks to some really pretty kind, I think, sixth form teachers, they let me into the sixth form at the school, even though I didn't really have the qualifications. And I was taught by an English teacher who continues to come and stay with us once a year in Suffolk now.
Really?
Roy Sampson, who was so magical that I wanted to not just read English at university. I wanted to teach English, but not just that. I wanted to dress like him, talk like him. Utter bewilderment at how someone could know so much and make complicated things seem so simple, but not too simple. They were simple enough, but you knew there was more to it. And so I got a real fascination for English. Did pretty well in English at A level. Went to a good university. Found I was good at English there, and that was it. So I was on this trajectory to go and do exactly what he said I would do, which was to spend your life reading and telling stories.
And are you glad? Have you ever looked back and thought, I wish I'd taken another path?
No, I haven't actually. Partly because, as I was saying before, the joy of being in school is so overwhelming, even when you have your grim days, and we all have pretty grim days. Last Friday, for example, was my last day at King Edward's, and I knew it would be my last English lesson. And I've had a group of A-level students who I've been teaching some poetry to. And it's a poet I haven't read before, they haven't read before, Owen Shears, his name is. They loved exploring that. I loved exploring it. And I was learning as much from them as they were from me. And there is something so mystical about that process and so special about it that even in this age when, as a friend of mine said, why do I need a teacher now? I've got Google. Actually, to have someone who knows stuff and knows which questions to ask and who can be as surprised by what you say to me as you are by what I say to you. There is something about that relationship between teacher and student which is simply magic, and I will, I'm sure, miss that. It'll be the most important feature of the job I'm saying goodbye to.
Take me back to your first lesson. You said you tried to dress as a 50-ish, and I read somewhere that you bought your Doc Martens specially to go into classroom.
I did.
Right?
Well, actually, it's interesting because my teaching practice was in Leicester. I trained at Leicester University just round the corner from where the Association of School and College Leaders has its headquarters. So I'm returning to the place where I started my education career. And I was teaching out at a school called the City of Leicester School, which is a bit different now from what it might have been. But I was teaching a class of year nines. And anybody who knows from teaching that year nines is sometimes the year group you kind of cut your teeth on because they are lost in the middle of the school system. And so they want to test out the young rookies who have just joined the staff room. And I remember one January morning walking across to this slightly bleak mobile classroom, seeing these students beating each other up, hitting each other with chairs there, and thinking, you know, here I am, 22 years old, needing to demonstrate that I've got more authority than 28 of them. And a lot of what you do in teaching, and indeed head teaching, is you bluff. You give an impression of knowing what you're talking about and what you're doing. And that was a very, very powerful lesson for me. And so the Doc Martens were part of the dressing like a teacher, and I learned how to speak like a teacher, stand like a teacher. Roy Sampson had demonstrated that to me earlier on without the Doc Martens. And I found that I could pretty much do that. And so that first lesson was teaching poetry, in fact, Wilfred Owen poetry to year nines in Leicester, and seeing the way that once you'd earned their respect, you could take them beyond the let's mess about, and actually maybe this bloke knows something that's worth knowing. And I remember an extraordinary young man who definitely wouldn't remember me now, but I remember him doing a piece of writing in which he was exploring a poem by Wilfred Owen called Futility, about someone in the First World War, and he put himself into the mind of that World War One soldier who'd now become disabled, describing what it was like to wave goodbye to the girlfriend he had previously known. And it was a beautiful, heartbreaking piece of writing from someone who could easily have been dismissed as a kind of pimply 14-year-old who didn't have feelings. He had a huge amount of feelings, and I was privileged that I was part of a process of helping him to articulate them.
So you did, Leicester was where you did your training, but you went to, I think, Leeds was where you were teaching to start with, is that right?
That's right. I went to the school that was called Garforth Comprehensive School then, run by an incredibly autocratic head teacher, quite extraordinary. And actually, my first year, I met Philippa. She was the new art teacher on the block. And we said, look, we'll run a school magazine for you. And I went to Laurie Loughton, his name was, and said, is there any chance I could get some sponsorship for this? And he said, yes, write to the school bank and ask them for £10, which was big money in those days. And so I wrote to them, and they wrote back a few days later saying they wouldn't give us £10. And I went to Laurie and said, disappointing, we can't have the colour front cover to the magazine that we wanted because they won't give £10. He said, fine, leave it with me. I went and then taught my day of lessons. And at the end of the day, he came into my final lesson and said, I just wanted you to know, Mr. Barton, that I've closed the school account and moved it across the road to a different bank. And there was just a sense for me of what leadership can do to support the most insignificant new teacher in the school and making me feel that what I did was important, and him doing something which in those days it was moving £40,000, now we'd be talking about £7 million or something. He did that because of his principles and his values, and I think probably as I reflect on my headship, I look back to what Laurie Loughton did. Very unpopular at times, very autocratic, different style from me, didn't dress up as Dolly Parton, which is probably a good thing. But nevertheless, I learned a great deal from working with him and people like him and seeing what leaders can do to help teachers in their classroom.
Did you always want to move through and be a leader? Did you ever think of that as you started?
No, I didn't. I wanted to teach English as well as I could. I enjoyed reading new texts and learning new bits of Shakespeare and so on and so forth. But actually, I kind of realised that I could do that well enough, and I became interested in what would I need to do to work with the people who are in the classrooms next to me. How could I learn from the genius teacher in classroom A, and how could I support the teacher who isn't so good in classroom B? And in order to do that, you go up a management ladder in education. And with each of those, it was never, for me, driven by ambition. It was driven by a kind of what-if mantra. Could I do that? And subsequently, one of my students from a long time ago, who now writes for The Guardian, Oliver Berkman, taught me a word, imposterism. And I think we all suffer from that. Am I an imposter? Will someone see through me? Am I really up to this?
They haven't found me out just yet. That's what we were saying. I got away with it again today.
15 years of headship and they didn't quite find me out.
You've got to
and I think that was partly, can I do this next role? How will I do it? What will I learn from it? And I think I've been driven from curiosity rather than ambition. And that's what led me to move through to head of English, head of sixth form, deputy head at Thurston, as you said, and then to King Edward's, where I stuck around longer than people would have thought because there was a big job to do and we enjoyed it. I worked with good people and wanted to stay there.
So, and it was coming here to Thurston, was it, that brought you to Suffolk?
It was, yes. I mean, we drove down from York. We're in a beautiful house in York, but had seen that there was an interesting deputy headship at Thurston. Drove down to Bury St Edmunds on market day. I subsequently talked to the head of Marks and Spencer's when I was doing kind of work experience visits, and he said, oh, we change all the displays in Marks and Spencer's shop window, we put all the Y fronts in on market day because that's our big sale. And it was a different culture from York, and it got me interested in rural schools and rural communities. And I listened to you reading out the list of things happening across the villages in Suffolk. This place is so special, but those youngsters in those schools, our schools, need to have a sense, A, of what's distinctive about where we live now, but also their connection with the wider world. And that's why one of the things I'm most proud of at King Edward's is we've been very outward-looking, Shanghai, Iraq, Poland, all these places, where we're giving a sense that you might have a different colour, a different background, but we're all the same. And on days like today, when we hear more atrocities, the more we remind each other that we are human beings with similar values, the better. And that's one of the things we definitely tried to do.
Is that when you look back at something, one of the things you're going to be most proud of so far?
I think so. We've established the longest partnership between a school in Shanghai and a school in the UK. And that's not a kind of cosmetic. It's not a jolly. In fact, one of the things I'm most proud of is that behind the scenes, we pay for one student to go. The governor's set aside an amount of money for a student who wouldn't, by their own background, be able to go to Shanghai. The governors pay for that. We never publicise who it is. They're simply one of the students on the trip. But it means we can stay true to our comprehensive principles and make sure that whether you're a child who comes from a more affluent background or a disadvantaged background, if you've got the right skills and qualities to benefit from a partnership like that, then you'll go. And this is the 10th year of that partnership. And I've got great friends in Shanghai as well as over here. But in the process, we've taught youngsters that they will be working alongside and competing against youngsters from Shanghai. So the more we can get them to know them and understand them, the better.
So if I talk about some of the things that you've done to when you've left school, because you mentioned, you know, that, I mean, you live in your community, don't you? And so you're never really off duty as a teacher if you live where your pupils are and
That's
so
true.
On. Mm. So what were the things, and you're a cook, I gather you quite like doing a bit of cooking, is that right?
I do. Yeah.
What's your dish if I was coming around for dinner? What would you
Well,
cook?
If you were coming around this weekend, listening to the weather forecast, I would probably get out this fantastic outdoor paella stove thing. And it always looks
you
incredibly
know
flash.
You obviously know me too well. I love paella.
Well, I mean, it looks incredibly flash. The great thing is, the secret of it is it's about assembling things in the right order and the right timings and putting the saffron in so it goes yellow and so on. It is just the best signal that summer is on its way. And I just listening to what the weather sounds like, it sounds like Sunday afternoon at our place will be paella afternoon. And
we'll all be there. It's one of those huge pans that you see when you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah, it's great. And it's just a lovely communal way of cooking and eating and having a glass of wine in the process. And my two boys, who've now left home but coming home this weekend, both love cooking. So Matthew is doing pizza night tonight. Nick, who gets home tonight, will cook for us over the weekend. We'll go out to Aldborough to eat on Monday. And that's been at the heart of what we've done over all the years. And the only downside for the kids was that they refused to come shopping with me to the supermarket because they were so sick of people stopping me all the way around, who were either previous parents, current parents, future parents. But that's a small price to pay, I think.
It's such a sociable thing, isn't it? You do have to explain as as well, the other passion you have is American jingles, which we've been trying to negotiate to play, but I gather we might have to pay copyright and so on. So I'm afraid we're not going to be able to play any.
Well, you're doing a service to your
listeners. Can you sing them for me?
No.
Is this from the radio, Dad? Tell me about this.
Yeah, so I... right from the very early days of being interested in the kind of Noel Edmonds, Tony Blackburn era of Radio 1, would hear these glorious jingles giving you the name of the station or sometimes telling you it was the traffic news or the weather or whatever. And my sister had moved across to the USA. She lived in Philadelphia. And so when we moved across there, I'd hear these same jingles with different lyrics and just became fascinated who made these things. And so started writing to the companies in Dallas, which is the epicenter of jingle making, and would collect them. And since then, I've had them made. And when I left King Edward's last week, the staff secretly had a 1 minute jingle made.
Specially made.
Oh. All about me. And it finishes, the lyrics at the end say...
Oh, we should have had that this afternoon.
I didn't want to inflict it on you, but it says, keep writing, keep fighting. We're going to miss you, Jeff. And it's the most heartbreakingly beautiful bit of cheesy Dallas singing. It's
Did they bring a tear to it?
Oh, that did. That's great, because it was written specially for me.
And you're
so
going to keep writing, because you write for the East Anglian Daily Times, Bury Free Press, and I know that in your new role you're going to do that.
Yes, I'll be writing endlessly and doing this kind of thing. Yes, as well as leading the organisation and the great team that are based there in Leicester and around the country.
So tell me about school holidays then, as you're here, and what you think of the Supreme Court, the ruling that, in fact, this parent who decided that he should be able to take his kids out of school, they've decided that he shouldn't have done.
Yeah, I would very much welcome that unanimous ruling that we heard yesterday, because you can imagine from a teacher's point of view, to try and plan lessons which are going to help children to be able to make progress, knowing that students may be there or may not be there at different points in the year, simply makes it incredibly difficult. And, you know, parents like me, we've got 12, sometimes more weeks a year to choose our holidays. I know it's hugely frustrating that prices go up and prices go down, but ultimately we have one chance for our youngsters as parents and as teachers to get them the best possible results and the best experience. And that's what we need to do. And yesterday's ruling makes that easier for us. And the only other thing I would say is that heads, of course, continue to be able to have discretion. So if there's special circumstances, you can still say we will count this as authorised absence rather than unauthorised. Now, we wouldn't do that for a school holiday, but we would do it if someone was going, for example, to a family wedding or something like that, because we think it's really important to be able to do it. So I think it's a helpful ruling overall.
Because, I mean, it all came down to what was attendance, wasn't it? So the parent was saying that regular attendance just meant that if you'd done 95% through the year and still had a holiday. So you don't see that? Some people say holidays, you know, are educational.
Yeah, the trouble with the 95% idea is that it means that a child is having half a day off a week. Now, if we think education is not that valuable and you can afford to miss half a day a week, so be it. But I would really not be doing my job properly, nor would all the teachers across the country, if we felt that 12 or 13 weeks a year of holiday isn't sufficient. It is. And we need to work with parents to make sure we give the best opportunities to students in the classroom.
So if you come back in 5 years... what would you like to have seen happen? What would you say, if you've in this role, what would you like to have seen change?
I think we're on the brink of having an education system which is genuinely world class, and I think there are parts of the UK which have got that. London has got a supremely good education system, and that's happened not by chance. It's happened because A, money was invested in it, B, they relentlessly focused on bringing the best people into the system and keeping them there. And I think if there's a collective will that we now need to see less changes in policy, we've got a curriculum that's in place, a qualification system that's in place, let's now stop distracting teachers from the most important job. Let's recruit more great people to stay in our schools, because, you know, something like 40% of teachers leave after 4 years or so. We need to stop that, and we need to do what all the best systems are doing, make it the number one profession that you want to go into, that you want to stay in, and see the satisfaction and the laughter and all the other things that I say have been part of what I've enjoyed in my time in Suffolk.
Value our teachers more.
Definitely. And teachers work hard, you know, despite everything that's sometimes said about them. They work hard, they have a complicated job, there's lots of joys in it. We need to allow them to enjoy the relationships with the youngsters so that those youngsters benefit from adults who are absolutely devoted to helping them to do as well as possible.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Have a final key question.
All right, thank you. When was the last time you were nervous? Well, I did a leaving speech to staff last week. Now, I do a lot of public speaking, but I knew that that was the last time I was going to be speaking to them, and the following day to students. And the interesting thing about the one with students, my last assembly last Friday, is that the very first assembly I did 15 years ago, I told the students we were introducing some achievement assemblies, we called them, and they booed me. And so in front of staff, I felt the humiliation of that. It's a little known secret. I felt utterly humiliated. Now, last week, I was going to just wish them farewell. And I talked about what had happened 15 years ago and said, this shows how this school has developed. It'd be unthinkable, that. And they gave me the most rapturous round of applause. But before it, I have to say, I did just have this slight flashback to just think what it was like, this school 15 years ago. So slightly nervous on my last day, and that's how it should be, I think.
And will you be nervous on your first day of your new job?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely, because it goes back to that idea of imposterism, where we all think, am I up to this job? So it's going to be exciting. Exciting, but it's a big, big step, and Suffolk has set me up very well to move on to it.
We're going to finish with your first ever record you've bought,
right, okay,
which I have memories of as well. I think we're obviously similar ages, I have to say. Admit all, it is.
It's Popcorn, I think, by Hot Butter, isn't it?
It is. Can you remember buying it?
I do. My parents took me on a package holiday to somewhere, Yugoslavia, I think, and I just heard this endlessly around the mini golf courses of Yugoslavia. So I came home and bought the single. I have to say, I don't play it so much now, so thanks for the treat.
Especially for you.